If you love the podcast and you want other valuable tools, resources, and coaching that will ignite the fire in you to go to the next level, then look, make sure you jump on the other various platforms we have. Absolutely, our YouTube channel, Alex Ranieri. And in there, you'll find the opportunity to have different coaching and resources and tools and tips, including our podcast episodes in video form, which a lot of people get value from too. But make sure you have a look at everything that we have to offer. High Performance Father is something that is a phenomenal movement that I'm very proud of. It's something that I love in this message that continually grows, and it grows in more fashions and ways than just the podcast. But I appreciate you tuning into this podcast with a couple hundred thousand downloads now. It's just incredible. So thank you very much. Enjoy this episode, but make sure you do go and use the other tools and the other valuable resources that we have.
I believe we are live. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody, to the All In podcast, where we talk about what it's like to be a father and a man living in today's unprecedented world, chaotic world. And I have my co-host with me, Alex Ranieri. I'm Lynn Trin. And together, both our names make All In. So, Alex.
Oh, man.
What's happening? How's your week?
Good, bro. Yeah, getting back into it. Had a little family trip away, which was nice, and then back into the chaos of life, as we're all aware of, being fathers, running businesses, providing for the family, maintaining great relationships, looking after ourselves. Been a good week of training, man. Getting back into that, I think that really helps. Yeah. It's I can't let you get too far in front of me. So I need to as fit and strong as possible. Got to get that back.
I saw you doing some training on our meetings. On our sales meetings. Yeah. So you were at the dentist today, were you?
Yes, yeah, man.
What'd you get done?
Checkups. I just check up on the teeth, make sure they're nice and healthy, man. They were really bad. I had like 11 fillings back in the day when I was a kid. It's fucking horrible, horrible nutrition, horrible diet.
What were you eating as a kid? You're half Italian, half Aussie?
Yeah. Mountain load of pasta. The boys will laugh at this too, man. Like, I'm one of four boys. It got to a stage where I used to hide the Coke, and I go to the bathroom and hide the bottle of Coke so no one else could take it, because there'd only be a little bit left. Like, fucking everything, man. I was a pure glutton. 114 kilos, Lynn, at between sort of 10 and 12 years of age. I was overweight between 8 to 16. It's bad, man. Like, it's just everything, hoarded everything, snacks, treats. Definitely the opposite of what we do now, man. Meat and fruits.
Just like Lillian. A little. All right. So speaking of which, I'm interested to dive into the topic of fuel and nourishment today, because I think it's important. Like, it just triggered a thought about your diet and how my diet's changed quite a lot. Like, we talk about how we've grown up eating, what is it, the normal pyramid diet, where you eat a lot of wheat,
six servings of breads and cereals.
You eat a lot of vegetables, okay, and the least important things were meats, right? Meats and fats.
Yeah.
So how did we come up to this concept? Like, I know for me personally, like, I've shifted my diet over the last 2 years, specifically 2 years, and prior to that, man, I've been in the fitness space for as long as you, like 17 years or something that I've been working out. Ever since I was 17, I started off as a personal trainer. I was really into dieting. Like, I did bodybuilding contests. I did If It Fits Your Macros. I've done flexible dieting. I turned vegan because Kerry turned vegan for a period of time for 2 years. So I was vegan. Man, I've done paleo. I've done keto. I've done intermittent fasting. And it wasn't until 2 years ago. And all of that stuff, at some level, it didn't feel quite right. Like, at some level, I've always grown up overeating food. Like, I've always gone, man, I'm always hungry. And if there was a diet that, you know, I could eat whatever I wanted and how much I wanted to lose weight, I would be on that diet. Because I always knew that my problem was overeating. It was always like, man, I'm always hungry and I'm always overeating. And then I just never felt full all the time. So, bro, if I rocked up to a cafe, like if I would stay at a hotel, you know, there was an all-you-can-eat buffet, I'd be fucked. Right? Game over. Game fucked. Like, I just knew what would happen. Right? And so no matter what diet I went on, I was always fucking hungry. Like, I was always not satisfied. And it wasn't until like 2 years ago that my diet actually changed drastically. And it wasn't specifically for weight loss or anything. It was specifically because Ocean, like my daughter's skin, she had eczema, and, you know, I might go into conspiracy theory land, but, you know, for the first 2 years, she was completely fine. And then she had her first vaccinations as a kid, you know, all those vaccinations that you get as a kid. And she had three of them in one day because we needed to catch up. And then after that, her skin has been shitty as hell. Like, she's got itchiness, she reacts, it wakes her up and keeps her up at night. She's got a lot of like redness in between the thighs, and it's, you know, she's quite irritated by that. And so a couple of years ago, we started to take food really seriously because it started off with her. And so she couldn't eat bread anymore because bread would like flare it up, right? And then she couldn't eat like muffins anymore. So obviously, like, she couldn't eat shit anymore, which is what I'm trying to say. Like, every time she would eat crap, processed foods, things in a packet, you know, nuts, she couldn't have nuts. And we had to get her better through a series of elimination diet. And then the only thing that she could actually eat was a lot of oxtail. We could feed her liver because we wanted to make sure she had all the vitamins and minerals. And so liver was a choice, and fruits. And so she really stemmed off. So she was eating a lot of root vegetables like potatoes, carrots, meats and fruits. And basically she was the catalyst of how I changed my diet. Because if she can only eat that, me and Kerry were like, well, you know, we shouldn't be having ice cream around her, because what kind of shitty parents would have ice cream around their kids when they can't have ice cream, right? So Ocean was the catalyst, and it kind of led me down the road to all these people, like the message that Liver King was sharing, which is a really good message, by the way, just not the delivery and how he shared it. There's this guy called Carnivore MD, and these people that were talking a lot about the carnivore diet, that really opened up my eyes. And so 2 years ago, I gave it a really good try. I went carnivore for 30 days straight. I felt like shit. Like, I felt good because part of it was I could eat. Part of the carnivore diet is eat how much you want to eat and let your body kind of tell you when you're full. And I was like, fuck, like that's what got me sold. I can eat as much as I want. Like, I don't want to be hungry in a diet, right? And so the thing about when you're eating a lot of meats and fats, it's so satiating that you don't want to eat anything else. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, bro, there's only so much steak or there's only so much lamb shoulder that you can have until you're like, fuck this. I don't want to eat food, right? So I was on it for 30 days and it was good and bad. Like, the good parts were I was full, I was losing weight, I was, you know, I wasn't having constipated shits like I thought I would because I wasn't having any vegetables. But the bad thing is that I noticed like a lot of my energy levels plummet. Like, I just wasn't getting, because I'd been training in the gym for like 17 years, that you need an amount of glycogen and glucose when I strength train. So my strength went down. My cardiovascular system went down. Like, I was doing 30-minute high intensity training with Kerry on the Peloton. And I was like, I can't keep up with my score. And then that's when I decided to add in fruits to obviously get the sugars back in, to get the fructose and the glucose back in. And ever since then, bro, I haven't looked back. I haven't looked back for over the last 2 years. And I can say that I feel generally the best. I don't have to think about my diet anymore moving forward. I'm not really thinking about, oh, what am I going to eat? It's really like going, hey, if it's meat, okay, if it comes from beef, if it comes from lamb is better than beef for me because it's not as scaled, it's not as mass produced. And so the quality, I reckon, in lamb, especially in Australia and New Zealand, is better. And it comes from fruit like watermelon, oranges, mandarins, you know, then I'm going to eat that. And so it's just not changed the game for me, but more importantly, Ocean's skin has been amazing over the last year and a half since getting on the diet. And so I've kept telling you, I've gone, bro, like, you know, I saw your kids come over and I was like, bro, we've got to fix their diet. We've got to fix their nutrition. And it's funny because, you know, even though they don't have the symptoms of eczema, it's like, it's crazy how eczema and having a consequence of eating shit, if there's a consequence that Ocean flares up, then she's going to want to eat well, right? And it goes back to needing those reminders in our life that we need a consequence if we do bad things straight away to remind us to do good things. And I think that's why the adherence has been so easy to stick to the diet. So that's kind of my backstory regarding diet. What about yours? How did you get onto like meat and fruits? How did we get to this same destination?
You just told me to, so I just do whatever I'm told.
Correct. Correct.
Good podcast. Similar things, man, you know, in a different way. I think being an elite athlete for so long, one of the biggest challenges was when I had my knee reconstruction, I still wanted to pursue rugby league, but I would swell up, man. Every training session, my knee would just be a balloon. They try and get me back because you just like it. You're like the meat market to them. If you can't produce, you're out, right? They look for the next talent, the next superstar. So I was forcing myself to get back on. And as a byproduct of that, man, I was smashing anti-inflammatories. And this then progressed into CrossFit, being able to snatch 120 kilos, clean and jerk 180 kilos, like lifting big weights, man. Again, the knee would swell. Even though my biomechanics were better and I wasn't doing contact sport like rugby league, I look back, man, over a span of, cause similar to you, probably a little bit less, maybe the last year, maybe 18 months. I've been following this regime, but before that, 15 years as an elite athlete, I'd try and outwork my diet. I made protein a priority, sure, but I was never as clean as I could have been. But also 15 years chasing that after that initial trauma with my knee back in 2007.
Yeah,
man, like it was always swollen. Anti-inflammatories for 10 years, Lynn. And I think the reason why you're talking about consequences, right, and this brings me to my point, with Ocean, it's easy to see because those inflammatory markers, and I think that was a big lesson for me, the inflammatory markers of eating bread. Bread won't kill you, but there's no consequences, right? If you're someone who hasn't had that susceptibility like Ocean has, or like my children, they eat meats and fruit, great diet, but we definitely sprinkle in more treats, so to speak. And because there's no consequence, it's something that's more widely accepted. However, the hard part for a lot of men watching this and fathers is as you enter your 40s and 50s and whatnot, when you turn side on, it just looks like you've got this fucking cancer that's growing on you. That's literally like when you look at people side on, you can almost shave it off and be like, man, look at that, get rid of that. There's an optimal human being. And that's a delayed long-term byproduct. But for me, man, it was pure inflammatory markers. Like since I've been eating meat and fruit and cleaning up, like I don't take any inflammatories anymore. My gut is heaps better because it was really bad, man. Like any inflammatories are really, really bad for your gut and your gut health. So bringing that in, man, I feel I'm not as lean. I'm getting there, but not as lean as when I was an athlete. But I'm training a tenth, but I feel so much more healthier now through having that wholesome nutritional protocol.
Well, I think a lot of men get fat per se, and I don't necessarily think that it's their fault. And the reasons why I say this is a lot of food is manufactured to taste good. A lot of food is manufactured to prolong its lifespan. And so there's a lot of artificial ingredients added so that the food has a longer use-by date. And by doing that, they manufacture food to taste good, and they manufacture food to be addictive. They manufacture food to live as long as possible. We generally know that and be convenient. And so what happens—
It's weaponized, isn't it? It's really been weaponized against slowing us down.
Yeah, I would say that it's food's been manufactured for profit. And so when you're looking at profit, you're not looking at what is the best ingredients to put into our mouth. It's kind of like going, hey, how do we increase the lifespan of this? What additives do we need to add? How do we make this more addictive so that people come back to buy more and eat more of this so that we can actually increase our profit margins? It's part of capitalism, right? And so there's a negative consequence here. And that is the food's becoming more addictive. Okay, the food that we eat isn't necessarily food or fuel that our body actually wants. Our body can use it. Like a lot of people go, back in the days when I used to follow if it fits your macros, it's like, bro, as long as you get your macros, you'll be fine. Like just follow your macros. And I go, and I bought into that belief. And I go, yeah, but just because it fits my macros doesn't mean I should be eating McDonald's. Doesn't mean I should, like if a pile of shit fits my macros and I literally take poo, dung, right? I put flavor into it. I sweeten it. I turn it in. I add dye to it so that it looks like ice cream. Should I still be consuming that dung fundamentally? And the answer is no. And I think the reasons why I say it's not our fault is because our biochemistry has been changed such that we don't know when we feel full. We're not intuitive with our bodies anymore. Like, and for a long time, I wasn't intuitive in my body. I was like, if I'm hungry, I'm losing weight. And so I'd get into this cycle of like, I'm starving and then I'm hungry and then I'd overeat and I binge and then I get hungry again. And the only way I knew how to maintain my weight was to be hungry. Like, and if I wasn't hungry, then I'd be fat. And I was tossing in between like hunger and being inflamed, because I'd get inflamed by eating like bread and fucking like, you know, me and Kerry at night, we'd have like jam and whipped cream because it fits our macros, right? So we'd starve all day, right? We'd push back breakfast all day to have dessert. And then that would inflame the heck out of me, but then I'd be lean but inflamed. And it was really, really weird. And it wasn't until I started to go down this weird intuitive way of eating what we all know is good for us, which is meat and fruits okay? And I'm going to talk about vegetables a little bit because I constantly have this debate with my sisters and my family when they come over. They're like, hey, should we not eat vegetables? And I go, well, it consists of pros and cons. What are the pros? What are the cons? And it comes down to vegetables are being oversprayed. There's a lot of shit inside of vegetables. And you're going to get a lot of antibiotics. You're going to get a lot of things. It can't be broken down. It probably destroys the gut. Oh, my camera's gone.
It's got their own defense mechanisms.
Yeah. It's got its own defense mechanisms. Okay. And so it's not necessarily good for us. So just going back to that, I think it's not men's fault because we're overeating because the food causes us to overeat. The food causes us to lose our intuition on what to eat, how much to eat. The food causes us to go, hey, our body can no longer communicate to us the signals, the right signals to tell us when to stop. And so quite often we get into the cycle of we're hungry and then we'll eat and then, oh shit, we're now really full. And then it's like, oh, now we're really full. And then 2 hours later, we're really hungry again. And so I think that's become a problem. I think it's important to address because I don't know how we're going to go into the future. I don't know what the future looks like regarding food. It looks like, you know, we're all going to be plugged into a tube and people are going to manufacture the food and then they're going to tube feed us all our calories, you know, as like robots and shit. So that's a little bit scary. But I think food's important because it's the nourishment of our body. It's the nourishment of our kids. And seeing firsthand what bad food has done to ocean skin has kind of just like brought out the awareness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely, man. And you're right. We're heading into a tough territory to navigate because traditionally, if you go back only a couple of generations, here are our fathers who know exactly the A to B process because they were in the agricultural revolution and farming. They knew what was involved. They knew exactly what they were eating, what they were putting in themselves. You know, you see even the explosion of cereals coming in the 1900s or mid-1900s where it's like all of a sudden you're going from eating bacon, eggs. The eggs came from the chicken that you looked after and fed on the farm, and you're eating steak. And the fact that even today, mate, that we need to label it grass-fed. Could you imagine like 100, not even 100 years ago, like saying, oh, yeah, that's grass-fed steak. Like the farmer would be like, what are you talking about? That's what cows eat. Hey, grass. So there's so much confusion. You're right, man. And there's so much where I agree. I think fathers, with the amount of stress on our plate and whatnot, we're not here to point the finger. It's not your fault, man. If you're feeling lethargic, run down, fatigued, and you've been bought into or seduced into a state of convenience, comfort, which has changed your complete biochemistry to then become dependent on something, you throw that on top of the mix of all the other chaos, like. It is very tough, man, for fathers to zoom out and then even explore the standards of what they've accepted, let alone do something about it.
It's also too, funnily enough, you mentioned that, and I want to make a point that I've come to the realization that food, as anything scales, the quality of it decreases, okay? Because as you scale something, and this is where you look at chickens, right? You look at chickens, and I don't eat a lot of chicken because I don't react well to chickens. I eat chicken and my skin starts to hive. So there's something there that's happening. And whether it's the antibiotics or whether or not it's the conditions by which the chickens are being grown. But when you scale something, the quality decreases. It's why my preference of meat, red meat, is kind of lamb. Because I look at they haven't quite scaled lambs in the sense that they don't have the big farming factories. They don't have like the way that chickens and pigs and cows are actually led in and they've kind of like added all these steroids. Lamb's quite abundant in Australia and New Zealand, fingers crossed, right at this time that it will stay that way. But I think over time, when you look at things that are popular, like I remember drinking milk when I was young and I was completely okay with milk. Like I didn't have lactose intolerance. Like back in the days, you know, you'd go to the milk bar, you'd buy a bottle of milk and you could drink it. Nowadays, everyone's lactose intolerant. And I think the reality is we're not asking why. We're not investigating, well, how has milk, the production of milk changed? How has the production of milk changed such that my body, it tasted like really good milk back in the days and now it doesn't taste like proper milk. I don't know if you've had milk lately, Al, but the taste has changed. And in order for me to get that same taste or that same thing back, I now drink cold press milk, which is like a different way for them to refine and process that milk to get rid of the bacteria and process it. And it's cold press. It's not pasteurized, not heated up. It's actually just used a lot of pressurized through cold pressing it, right? But when I drink that milk, it takes me back to the childhood, takes me back to going, oh my God, this is what milk used to taste like. And I'm not lactose intolerant. And so it comes to this place where it's like we have all these things such as gluten intolerancy, lactose intolerancy coming as a byproduct of scaling food so quickly to meet the demands of what people need. I think it's an important conversation. I'm definitely no expert by it. I'm just literally just pointing out my observations, my changes with it. But I genuinely think that, you know, if you want to live a good life, if you don't want to be inflamed, if you want to have your weight under control, if you want to feel full and satiated, I can't recommend going back and just getting your body really good foods to eat. The meat and fruits are probably my first recommendations, and remove everything else. And if you do something as simple as that, if you eat as much meat, how much meat should you eat? Man, I would say, I'd say 80% meat and 20% fruits. It's probably what my diet is. Fruits is kind of like the topping, but I'm trying to always trying to look for fatty cuts of grass-fed meat, organic, right? It's even funny that you mentioned grass-fed and how we have to say that it's grass-fed because it's actually used as a marketing ploy. What I mean by that is companies have gotten onto this, and so they're only grass-fed, right? The craziest part is that butchers can state that their stuff is grass-fed if they've only spent like a little bit of time eating grass, but then they're finished with grain. And that's also a little bit fucked up too. Like, that's the craziest extent. And so when you go into your butchers, it's really important. Kerry told me this, that you ask for 100% grass fed, grass finished. And it's crazy that we even have to consider these conversations to ask, because there's such trickery everywhere, right? There's so much trickery. Everyone's trying to trick you. And so food's become one of those things that when I was starting out, I was like, food's so easy. Everyone's so complicated with food. Everyone's overcomplicating with food. But it is actually, as time's gone on, I've actually understood it is a complex process because it's ever changing. Like, you have to think about it. There are less nutrients inside of our soil. Everything comes from our soil. And because we're trying to scale up and we're trying to farm things so quickly and we're trying to like mass produce these things, right? The soil produces the grass, the cows eat the grass, we eat the cows. Like, there's a whole circle of like, that's the most basic summary. Now, if we're trying to scale up our food production and we're producing more animals, more cows, we're injecting more steroids, and they're taking more grass out of the soil, then there's fundamentally, there's less nutrients, there's less ions, there's less minerals inside of the soil. Every time we go through a cycle, there's actually less nutrients in the soil and therefore there's less nutrients in the grass, there's less nutrients in the meat. And so when we look at scaled productions, our food is actually becoming less nutrient dense, even though you're eating the exact amount of same beef, same things. And I think that's really important to understand. I'm quite scared about the future of food and where it's going to come from. I'm actually quite scared of us as human beings losing our intuitive nature with like going, oh, this, even though we can eat a shit ton of food, right? We can put Maccas in our body, we can process shit. Our body's amazing for us to survive on that. Like, you know, as a student in the uni days, man, I could survive off Mee Goreng. Like 2 minutes, like, you know, Mee Goreng, it was the fucking most amazing thing. I was like, going, but now that I think about it, I think, fuck, it's the most processed, crazy MSG amount of chemicals that I would never even, but bro, I went like 5 years just eating Mee Goreng for lunch every day. And so the conversation of food needs to be had, because I generally think that most people don't know what to eat or how to eat, and they don't have they're losing their gut intuition when it comes to recognizing food. Like, they're losing the receptors and the responses of what their brain says to their gut. They're losing, hey, am I full or am I hungry? And I found this paradox too. And I think that the craziest part, man, is this. The fitness industry, the people that are the fittest, though, they look lean, they're not the healthiest. In fact, they live their lives in such a regime that they're so obsessed about weighing everything out. Okay, that's not healthy to me. That's obsessive. That's like, I don't want to live my life fucking weighing, bringing a scale to the restaurant because I need to weigh up how much my food weighs. I think, you know, our bodies should tell us when to eat. Our bodies should tell us when to stop. And the reasons why we're losing this is because of all the chemicals and not being able to process the right foods for our body. And so our body's confused as to going, hey man, I know you ate a lot of stuff. I don't know what the hell it is, so I'm going to tell you that we're full now. And then, oh wait, where are all the nutrients? We're now hungry again, right? It's this complex. And it's really funny what the fitness industry portrays, especially bodybuilders. that that's the pinnacle of health, and yet it's so far away from what health is. It's ironic that the fitness industry portrays health, okay, but it's got nothing to do with health. Like the bodybuilders on stage that are absolutely shredded. They're jacked up with drugs. They got steroids jacked up in them. They're at their most weakest state on the show. And yet we idolize that. Some people idolize that. We look at that and we go, we want to aspire to be that. And what you're going to recognize is that person's dehydrated. They got no fluids inside of their body. They're hungry as fuck. They're also weak as fuck. They can't do shit. They're drugged up as hell. So that's idolized as health. And I think this conversation, as I've matured over time, don't get me wrong, I was part of that crowd at one stage, bodybuilding, competing, going, hey, like I know about health. And yet I was eating tons of chicken. I wasn't looking for organic, no grass fed. You know, I was having bread and grains as long as it fitted my macros. And yet I was anything but the pinnacle of health. And so having a look at Ocean and really being responsible for her and her food has opened up my eyes as to what health actually is.
Isn't it funny? It's an extremely unbalanced approach for what should be the beacon of light in the health and fitness industry, right? When you look at it,
got nothing to do with that. The craziest part, it's like it's all a bit of a scam. It looks like a Ferrari on the outside, but then you open up the engine, and it's like fucking little Toyota. It's worse. It's got no engine. It's got absolutely no fundamentals. Now, obviously, if you're 100 kilos overweight and you do some of the things that the fitness people talk about, sure, you're going to be more healthier than you are. However, there's another line where you're not really optimizing for health now, you're optimizing for looks. I think that's quite dangerous as well, as you know, as society evolves and we all get sucked into how somebody looks, but not how they feel, how they're functioning, how they're performing.
Longevity.
That's my little rant on nutrition, man. And I'm really glad that I can push you and tell you, man, like this is important. I say it's important because I want you to be healthy, but I have that gift where if Ocean doesn't eat well, we know straight away. We're penalized straight away. And so that keeps us in the lane. Does that make sense? Whereas other people might not have that, and so they don't get that gift. I see Ocean skin as like not a hindrance, it's a reminder for us to eat well. And every time we don't eat well, we there's a consequence.
Yeah, and one of the fatiguing things for a lot of people, including myself, men, and a lot of fathers out there, is I love it from David Goggins, as crazy as he is. It never ends. Like, you guys are never going to get there and be like, awesome, I'm set. It's like, no, you need to eat another 21 meals this week. And that the game never ends. And when I say fatiguing, what I mean is, life gets in the way, man, and we slip and fall back. And for me, when I lost my voice back in September, I mean, you remember we caught up in Darwin, right? I was in good shape, man. Everything was humming along nicely. And, you know, obviously fell ill with this irritation in my throat, which lasted over 6 months. The unfortunate reality is psychologically, physically, I couldn't train, couldn't get my heart rate up. There were so many different things that pulled me away from being an optimal human being, where it just became this domino effect. And guess where it led to? The nutrition falling to shit again. And then I look at this to and fro. There's Christmas, there's parties, there's New Year's, then there's we're getting ready for other family celebrations. All of a sudden, between December and March, I look at a lot of the food I was eating, and because it was my throat, everything passes through there. So pure exposure as well as from the inside out. I look at how inflamed I was, Lynn, and I was checking my blood pressure because I've got the history of it, because that was another thing that the doctor made me go and do. Man, I was hitting like 160, 170. diastolic, systolic. Yeah. Like the diastolic when it relaxes was always low. It's always between, they say 80. Mine's always been between 65 and 75. But that was, I look at that, man, and the nutrition failed me. And it was, and for someone who was an elite athlete, this is where I say for a lot of these men, it's so fatiguing in the chaos of life and what we face, where you pack it in, you give up, and you feel yourself in this whirlwind again, where you've essentially, you've tolerated and accepted a standard again, and it's so detrimental, and it pulls you away from where you need to be.
Well, I apologize for my segue in food. I think it's a good segue to cover. I think I do have quite a substantial experience in it, but I wanted to bring it up because of your tooth this morning. But now that my camera's back, so food's important. I think the thing that I'm going to ask is, how do you raise the thing that Kerry and I have difficulty is Ocean being at school in kindy. how do we raise and lead our kids to eat better food, knowing that as kids we would eat junk food ourselves, and we would know what happens in primary school and kindergarten and preschool, where we would want to share food. I would want the packet of chips. I would want the lollies. How do you go about navigating that with your kids, such that when they go to school, they make better decisions?
Yeah. Well, I believe the process is something that needs to be lived as well. And what I mean by that, because I made notes when you were talking earlier about, the reason why we find ourselves, especially as men, talking mostly to men as well, but everyone, we find ourselves in this slump with nutrition and wellness. What about the exploration of, well, how do we get out of this funk? So the reason why I say that, mate, is for you to be able to give your children the right direction and pathway, it's got to be something you live and breathe first. And what I wrote here was the very first thing is actually looking at experiential outcomes. So what I mean by that for those listening or watching is the only way you're going to change and get your shit together with your food, your nutrition, your health and wellness is actually looking at and going, what kind of life do I want to be living? Experiential, like what does that look like? What am I doing with my children? What are my energy levels going to be like as a grandfather in 15 years time? And really painting that picture and that vision. But then with that, looking at what's the generational impact I can also have. Okay. And I think every father and mother should do that first and then tie that into the answer is communication to your question. How can I now communication? I know you're getting to, I'm sorry.
I was doing that thing again. I asked him a simple question, then he gives me the meaning to life. This guy, he does this all the time. On, I love it. I asked you a very simple question. How do you lead?
Talk.
How do we lead our children so that they don't fall into that trap? Well, Lynn, let me give you pie. The square root of life is, I'm like, bro.
Let me talk about the Big Bang Theory. You've got to
be
that.
How would you do this with Lillian? How would you do this with with your kids?
So
I'll share my take.
Yeah, exactly, man. No, but just as that layer for these guys, like you can't be a fucking hypocrite is my point. You know, okay. So for Lillian and the kids, what I do is I tie into what they value in life. So a lot of around them right now is netball, dancing, sports, physical performance.
Yes.
Because kids are so easily tricked into the taste, everything you explained about the chemical imbalances and tasty food. So I tap into what they value and then I leverage a higher outcome and better experience of what they value and tie that into something that I know is good for them where they don't have the knowledge, information, or buy-in. So when it comes to food, Stella, you need to eat this meat. This meat's going to really help you. It's going to make you jump higher with ballet. And I'm finding what their perception of value is, tying in what I know is for their own good and connecting the dots for them. That's the answer. And it works. Fucking works so easy. But it's having that awareness and applying it to yourself first.
But you're right. You're right with communication. I think the first thing is if we want behavior to change, we have to change. Like for myself in particular, like we don't have any sweets, we don't have any junk food around the house. Our fridge, if you open our fridge and our freezer, it's got meats and we have fruits. Like fundamentally, that's it. I think the
and
other
50 blocks of Lindt chocolate.
Yeah, 70% dark chocolate, right?
99%, shout out to Abs.
But I think when it comes down to leading them, it comes down to communication and playing it out with them. So for example, when Ocean goes to school and she eats something bad or she wants to eat ice cream, I think me and Kerry play this out and we go, cool, we can eat ice cream. Let's have some ice cream. And then it's easy for her because she gets a direct reaction. She starts getting itchy. She starts getting red. And so we can process this out and it says, hey, it's going to make you itchy. You're going to get red. You're not going to be able to sleep at night. You're going to feel tired all the time. You're going to feel grumpy. And so there's consequences and we allow our kids to experiment the downfall and process it with them such that we can be in the shit with them to go, hey, man, like this is your choice. You wanted the ice cream, but here are the consequences. And I think for a lot of people, like I'm thinking about Lillian and I'm thinking about Stella, your kids, I'm like going, hey, like if you want that bag of lollies at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, sure. Like here it is. Let's try it once. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to advise you that it's a bad idea, but let's play it out. If you keep insisting, sure, let's do this together and let's run this as an experiment. Have the lollies on an empty stomach. Recognize that you're going to have a stomach ache and a stitch for the next 2 hours. Recognize that that was a consequence of having the lollies on an empty stomach at that time. And then pull into going, well, you're not going to have dinner at night. You're not going to be strong. You're weaker because you're not nourished. You don't have nutrients inside of your body. And then give them the consequence so that we educate them on the consequences of their actions and then the future course. I don't particularly like it when I see parents say, no, no, don't do this, don't do that, without actually like processing it through with them first. Because that's how we learn as humans. Everybody does this. You know, I can tell you what to do. Like we can go through, hey, Alex, this is how we should build out the sales team. And we should have a sales manager doing this. And we should actually keep them accountable and do this, this, this. And they're like, yes, Lynn, yes. And then what happens? Nothing happens, right? And then we learn. And then we go through the pitfall and the consequence of not actually implementing that change. And then we go again. And then what happens? Change only happens when we get so fed up of changing that changing in itself is the pain, that we don't want to go through this whole experience again. That's the driver to now fully change once and for all. And I genuinely think that if giving this away practically, it's like going, hey, like sit down, have the patience to process this out with your kids. Let them make mistakes, show them and educate them through their mistakes of what happens and the consequences, like you said, Al. Does that make sense?
Yeah, man, this is why parenting is a real skill. It's an art form. None of us are born with it. Well, Lynn says that I'm genetically a phenomenal father. I don't know how that works, but I'm trying to process it. But yeah, look,
not a genetically phenomenal father. I genuinely think that you've had a good environment, or from what I've seen, to bring you up to not have the bullshit to tackle that I've had to tackle. Because when I say like my upbringing was pretty tough, it wasn't tough in any sense. Like we're in Australia. There's nothing tough about being in Australia. But I mean tough in the sense that I'm growing up, I'm the youngest of six kids. All my parents want me to do is become a doctor. All they want me to do is be successful. All I get to do is have no friends, okay? Because friends are evil. Friends will take me around on drugs. Friends will steal my shit. Friends will rob our houses. There's so much fear around this, and there's such strong conditioning that it's taken me a long time to process through my own conditioning of what is right, what's wrong, what's right versus what's wrong for myself, as opposed to what's right and what's wrong for my father. And process through that so that I don't pass bad negative traits onto my kids, but I pass the good ones. When I look at you and the way that you parent, I think naturally you're in a better place to not put a lot of shit on, because there wasn't a lot of shit put on you. Or maybe that you've just naturally come in a better place to have more patience and enjoy more life. Whereas I've always been built as like, yo, you are a soldier, go work, go study. Have you studied? Did you do that? Yep, cool. And so a lot of that drives my actions and my ability to see the world. Whereas I don't think you have that. You might have other things, but I think not having that sets you up better for parenting, because if you're consistently rushing all the time and pushing all the time, parenting is all about being patient. Parenting is all about flowing. Parenting is all about going, hey, here's what I think will happen, but I'm okay if this shit doesn't happen either way. I was very built in like an army military style kind of like communist. I would say, you know, my parents hated the communists, but they put communism on us, right? Very structured, very regiment. And so when it comes to parenting my kids, that doesn't actually help at all, because it creates a lot of rules and conditions, and I pretty much set all of us up for failure. So I'm saying that that's an example of how I've had to work through something from my past that doesn't actually tailor or doesn't actually benefit this side of my life, which is parenting. On the other side, I can see the flip side, because having that structure really sets me up to win in like business, or it sets me up to have really good structure and really good discipline and really good drive. But on the parenting side, it's like completely useless. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we find that too, don't we? Like a lot of guys coming into HPF, they try and, not that I'm saying you're doing this, you're very aware of it, but they try and run their family like they run their business, and it just doesn't work. You got to be reading the room. You've got to assess, listen. They're all got different mentalities, like Stella's, and this is, I guess, my frustration, maybe for another day, to talk about how things get pushed onto our children so much that are such big issues adults can't even psychologically handle. Stella's brain operates completely different to Lillian's, completely different to Roman's, 6, 4, and 2, male and female. It's obviously there's only ever two and only ever will be. But that's something that you need as a parent to understand. Is the type of conversation I'm going to have with my 9-year-old going to be exactly the same as my 5-year-old who's a boy and my 9-year-old's a girl? Definitely not.
It is enough. Man, I see that. I see ads like that, like run your family as if it's your business, or run your life as if it's your business. And I think there's one thing, like I'm going to get this straight on record. I'm only interested in business. I'm only interested in business, not because I'm interested in business, but I'm interested in living a good life. And the only way to live a good life is to build a good business, right? And that's my only interest in it. I've come to recognize that. I don't want to do business for the sake of doing business. I would rather enjoy life. But in order for me to live the best life, I have to have a good business. I think the distinction needs to be quite clear. And here's where a lot of people go wrong, including myself, on how I've looked at my life as business. Life is art form. The kids are continually changing. You have two kids, you have so many variables. You know, I've got Atlas who is 6 months, right? And he's now starting to like sit up. That's fine. There's not a lot on with Atlas. But Ocean, from 3 to 4, within like 6 months of her life, she completely changes into a different person. She's adopting different things. Kerry, my wife's going to change. She's going to want something this year, and the next year she's going to want to do something else. There's so much variation happening inside of life that in order for you to put in structure and assume that, hey, this is how it's going to go, is setting yourself up for failure, because that's not how it is. You're boxing everything up, and you're not allowing the form of art to actually flow. In business, you want predictability, and you only deliver a product or service over and over again. If you consistently innovate in business and you're always changing your product, and you're always, every month, you're creating a new product or you're creating an entire new business model, then you cannot run your business systematically or put systems and processes in, because whatever systems and processes you put in last month are now redundant this month because you have an entire new business model. The fact is, with life, you have an entire new business model every 3 months. Like, Ocean's going to be a completely different person. She's going to go up to be a little girl going into like prep school. She's going to be a teenager. That's completely different. I'm going to have a few more kids, hopefully, down the track. That's going to be different. The dynamic is going to be different. And so when you run your business as if you're trying to systemize your life, you're set up for failure. You can only systemize your life if you're a man that's single and like you're like, yo, I want to create this system and I'm going to run my life this way. But it doesn't work if you're trying to build a family and you're trying to encourage growth and you're trying to encourage them to self-explore and be who they want and be the best version of themselves and actually work together to create art, because art cannot be systemized. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And there's a ratio, isn't there, when you think about it? All the stuff you're explaining which causes the chaos, not from men lacking the awareness you've just explained, it's caused from them trying to control things you can't. It changes, man. Like every 3 seconds.
All the arguments.
You can't control. You can influence and you can try and overpower Ocean. Of course you can. You're a large man. She's a little girl. But yeah, they try and control things.
Every little bit. And I just want to go back to that point. I think that you can have principles. You can have, hey, on the weekends, this is when we play and we're going to do a date night and we're going to do a date day and Monday to Friday, you can have a routine. But if you try to box everything in as a system, then the people eventually start outgrowing the system. Ocean outgrows my system. And then I'm consistently having to come up with new systems for the new person. And that just doesn't work. You set yourself up for failure. Like, and that's where a lot of the times you get into arguments, you get into disappointment. There's a lot of chaos. How I've dealt with it, I think this is where you deal with it really well, is I see you and you're around your kids and you're like, let them be kids and we're going to have fun. And like, you're patient. You don't have zero expectations that anything's going to get done, right? Yeah. Like zero, none. You're going to travel with 3 kids when you first landed in Fiji. What was your expectation for the first day?
Oh,
nothing.
Yeah.
Like if we make it there, we're good. Nothing, yeah, nothing can be done. We're not trying to like do as much as we can. We're not trying to get to something on time. You're literally going, hey, I'm with my kids and shit's about to happen. I know shit's going to happen. You set the expectation really low so that even though you have your standards, this is the difference between standards and expectations, you expect nothing from your family. Like I expect, man, if we get a dinner and we can get the kids to bed on time, that's sweet. And even if we don't, how it is what it is, right? I think a lot of us create a lot of the chaos, the anxiety. I know for myself, because I put expectations on things. And if I stop expecting anything, then I expect the worst, then that's when you become really happy and you become really fulfilled and patient.
Agreed, man. Like I think where a lot of men and a lot of us probably get it wrong is we have an expectation of outcome instead of an expectation of principles and standards to be upheld. And that there's a difference. Your children are going to fail. Mine fail all the time. So what I love is this beautiful
balance.
Well,
they have to fail to learn, right? Like if they're not failing, how are they learning?
Exactly.
Kerry makes that good point to me, because trust me, like I still tell Ocean, don't do this or don't do that. It's going to fall. And I'm like, well, Ocean's like, Kerry's like, but if she doesn't fail, how will she learn? I'm like, good point. Right. So she's actually my guide when it comes to parenting. But sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah. No, but that's exactly it. That's what I was going to expand on around, look, our kids have hurt themselves, graze their knees and whatnot. I don't want them to go through a traumatic experience like, okay, jump off 3 steps going downstairs. Yes. You might fall. Okay, well, let's jump off 10. There are lessons that don't need to be learned through traumatic expression. Mm. But also, yeah, agreed, man. They need to learn about their failures. And that's what I love, because whilst I don't have expectations, because I know they're going to fail millions of times, just like you and I have through all the stages of life, especially as a child, they change every few months, like you said. The biggest thing is making sure that us as men, we combine that and that acceptance and I guess not tolerance, but having that open nature and that support coupled with challenging them. So I do challenge my children. I challenge them to pursue. I challenge them to stretch, to grow, to try things. But I don't have an expectation that they'll be successful, because I know, man, if they keep doing that, Lynn, and they learn from their failures, that's a lag measure, right? They will become successful. They're resilient, persistent. But also we haven't taken away the joy. And a lot of people forget that, man. Joy is so important in life. And that's not a fluff word. It's vital, I think. Otherwise, why are we here?
I agree, especially, man. I think, do you think there are any similarities between parenting and running a business? Or yes. Do you think that there are more opposites?
I think both.
Okay. I think
there are fundamentals. Yep. So similarities would definitely be principles and standards. They could be different things, but they need to be established and in place. That's a painful lesson that you've obviously seen me go through time and time again.
Culture.
Exactly. For sure. And then opposites, I'd say, would be, I'd say probably leveraging between the emotion and the logic as a man. They have their place for sure in business, but they also have a different place inside of parenting and our children. So there are opposites in terms of the goals. What are we going to set? So fundamentally, yeah, you could have goals in business and family. You could have standards in business and family. But I think inside of those men, at a strategic or tactical level, I do believe they're applied sometimes completely opposite. Yeah.
I think.
What are your thoughts?
I think you're right. There are some similarities. There are some complete differences. Similarities in running a really good business is to have predictability, and systems in place and organization and structure. Okay, it's really important for everyone to know what they're doing. And every day you want things to relatively be the same. And every week you want to relatively look back at last week and improve on the function inside of business, whether it's marketing, sales, fulfillment, or whatever the case. Like, you're just trying to build a steady ship. In parenting, quite often you have to be prepared for the worst. It's chaotic. And quite often I find myself trying to like systemize, like create order. Right? Create like, hey, this should be done this way. And by 6 p.m. tonight, you got to get into bed and you have to wake up at this time. And this needs to happen. What can happen is you lose the joy of what you talked about. You lose the joy because you're so busy just getting parenting done that you're so exhausted at the end of the day. Your kids are crying all the time because they don't want to do stuff. They don't know why they're being so moved. They don't know what's the rush, right? They're so present in the moment that they're like, yeah, I just want to play. Cool. Why do we have to pack up playing? The kids ask the best questions, which is, why do I have to not play anymore? And I often come up with the answer because, you know, I don't know. Like, I really don't know. Why do we have to play? I don't know. We just have to do it because it's on the schedule. That's what mom said. Why did mom say this? I don't know. So what really happens is the answer is, when kids ask that, the answer is because I'm afraid that you're going to break the schedule and shit will be chaotic and I don't know how to deal with chaos. Mm. Like fundamentally, the thing that we're afraid of is like, we don't know how to deal with chaos. We don't know what would happen if Ocean sleeps at 9 o'clock at night or she doesn't sleep. We're so afraid that she won't sleep at all, but that's not the case. Like, if you play it out, we're so afraid of dealing with chaos that we're just seeking structure all the time.
Seeking certainty.
Seeking certainty, seeking comfort, seeking structure and what we know to be comfortable. I think that's one of the hardest things of parenting, man, is literally to just be in the space with them and be like, okay, take your time. I don't know. When do you want to finish? You know, cool. Hey, like it's trying to be in collaboration with our kids and talk them through, hey, do you want to have dinner? What do you want to have for dinner? Okay, cool. What time do you want to have dinner? Do you want to have dinner now? Do you think we should go to bed now? And I think somebody that can collaborate, Kerry does this phenomenally well. And I follow her lead because when she first did it, I'm like, you think you're going to get the right answer? You think Ocean knows what time? But over time, it works phenomenally well. And that's been the most impressive thing. And it surprised me the most because I grew up just being told what to do. And if I didn't do it, I'd get smacked. You know what I mean? So like there was no processing. It was do this or die. Does that make sense? That's the choices that I had as a kid. And so I realized that there's a better way. There's a better way to lead yeah. kids.
And I think it's the gift that children bring us, man. Like have a look. They are the embodiment and essence of life because what they're doing and what you're explaining then is they're experimenting. They come into this world with no boundaries other than the limits we impose on them. Shefali's great with this stuff. And when we're looking at, you know, obviously she knows her stuff and she's phenomenal, but it's really understanding that our children, yes, boundaries and structure and order is important, not just from, I don't like using the word safety. It's been abused the last few years in my eyes, but definitely from a safety / security point of view and their well-being for sure. However, we can't do that at the cost of the essence of life, which is evolution through experimentation and trying new things. That's what our children, that's what they thrive on, man. And I think that's why communication is so important because I love unwinding the mind and what they're thinking, how they're creating. Some of these drawings, man, you just laugh and it's so funny when Lillian draws pictures of us and why do you have the curly hair and I have the curly hair? And funnily enough, me and her look very similar. And the other three, so my other two kids and Corinne, all have straight hair on the drawings. And I'm unpacking that. And that's so fascinating. Some guys might find that boring, but I think as a father, that's how you connect. And that's how you become, like, it's funny, the dichotomy of life, man. You talk about predictability in business. We need that. But then what our children need is predictability in us. Like we spoke about before with disciplining our children, can you stay on the level and actually not and have your own self-control intact so you don't seek it over them and give them the predictability whilst allowing them to flourish and thrive? And that I think that's where the joy really is, man, seeing creation every day because they are in that constant state of change that we can see so much more than between 25 to 30, between 30 to 40. Man, every few months for the first 18 years.
What was that stat? What was that stat that you shared with me? Like 80%?
80% of your relationship with your children is in the first 18 years of their life.
Yeah.
Like,
is that because people spend the most time with their kids? Like they're obviously looking after their kids. By the time they're 18, the kids are out, they're off with a girlfriend, boyfriend, they're starting dating, they're starting work, they're moved out. Is that
the environment, whatnot? For sure. So it's not that it's a negative stat. It's a realization of how precious the time is that you have with them to influence and raise and build them into creating an amazing human being in themselves, because that is very limited. Even you and I with our sons or with our children creating businesses and things, because I definitely want to be part of that with my children growing up. I want to be a heavy part of life where I've got, regardless of where they live in the country, I've got houses everywhere and I can go stay there and sleep. Even though that being said, they're not under my roof anymore, man. They've got their life to live and it's still going to be a very small percentage for the next 40 years, 50 years of their life as opposed to the first 15 to 18.
I've got a question. Would you homeschool your kids? Like
100%.
Yeah.
We need to create a school, don't we? Isn't that our next business venture?
What point?
Creating schools.
No. What point? At what age will you homeschool your kids? When is the school environment to go, I don't think.
Eight or nine. I wouldn't want to go past that, to be fair.
How old Stella?
She's six. Okay, we got 2 years to make it happen.
Okay. Right. And why would you choose to homeschool?
I just think there's more value and impact you can have with the time that you give as opposed to what they're currently running through in a mass produced curriculum.
Okay. Why else?
I believe it gives you more opportunity and chance under the environment that you're exposed with them to install and influence and reinstall. Reinstate the right values, because you gotta look at this, man. Like even Netflix and all social media aside, like they're going to be exposed to so many different upbringings and environments for other children. Okay. Saturation is important, and it's not about controlling my children. Like it's our family. Like we buy into these values. We're a family. We're a unit. I think that's vital, and that gets thrown away where other people are raising your kids. Right? I mean, it's just an observation.
The other people are raising your kids, okay, who may not have similar values to you. Okay, great. They're not learning a curriculum that or a skill set that they can actually apply inside of their life. It's quite generalized. We know this. Okay. So the schooling system, obviously, how many things, like if we have to process this out and there's an argument for, argument against, I hear this quite a lot and we'll start argument against homeschool. Like what will happen to the kids? Will they be social? They're really scared, right? So like, you know, there's a valid argument. Will my kids be able to socialize with other people since they're not actually brought in to, like, you know, they're locked at home is what people think homeschooling is. I think the other argument is, will they be as quick as other people, right? But the argument for homeschooling is going, hey, I don't want my kid to be educated or taught by another person who doesn't have similar values or principles as I do. That's very hard to control. They're learning generalized information, whereas I can teach them specialized information. Does that make sense? Like, if we just do, like, you know, I think about it, if we're going to create a homeschool, Ocean can learn a language right now. She can learn how to build things. She can come in to learn on, you know, she could learn how to do like a ninja school. She could learn ballet, or she could learn something very specific to her skill set, and she can run the classes every day. And if you focus specifically on things that are practical, then they get better. Their road to mastery increases quicker. She'll become a master at things by like 8, by 9, by 10. Just by it through repetition of the same thing. Very like interesting. Yeah. So what's the plan to homeschool then? If you know you're going to take Stella out, what's the plan? Like what needs to happen?
I think the biggest thing would be to identify, I think first and foremost, not so much what will we teach her, what are the time and energy requirements? That's where most people, like you would ask anyone right now, would you homeschool? No, I don't have the time. I don't have the energy. Like that would be it first. How can I connect and commit the time and energy that's required?
Yeah.
And then the second point would 100% be, okay, cool. What would I do that's different to, you know, the masses and what they're trying to make for every other normal average person? Because I don't want that life for me.
It's such a big thing, isn't it? It's like, hey, like if she's at home, then like who's going to look after her? Will I have to look after her? How does that even work? Will I even have the time? And I think a lot of people are getting to that point where they do want to do a homeschooling. I think that we're opening up the conversation because we're seeing such bad curriculum inside of school. We're seeing what they're teaching inside of school, and a lot of us generally don't agree with everything. And so there's always that spark of thought, but in order to take action on it, it's too much of a leap. It's too much of a jump in order to take action on homeschooling because we don't have that time. We don't know what to do. And so, you know, something that I proposed last week is we got to build our own school. We got to look at building our own school, figuring out how that works so that we set up the curriculum, and inside of this school, you're going to have life skills. Okay. You're going to have like self-defense skills. You're going to have like sporting skills, like teamwork, sporting activities. You're going to learn about money, and you're going to learn about how to create things. You're going to learn how to make things. You're going to learn how to sell things. You're going to learn about taxes and money at some stage. Like every time you sell something, we take 10%. Oh, that is what it is, you know, 20%. You got to put that aside. Like we're not going to teach taxes. We're going to like teach taxes by actually taking the money that they make when they sell shit, right? That's like, you can't teach taxes in theory. You got to teach taxes by principle and application. So that's
it. Yeah.
That's a very, very interesting idea. But I just wanted to bring it up because I think we touched on it last week. I want to sit down next week and figure out what the plan is. How are we going to create this homeschool? We can put it out to the tribe. We can GoFundMe it. We can actually get it running as a business to figure out what memberships would cost. What would we do? I reckon that would be a good segue for the next podcast episode to go, hey, if we were going to create the perfect school, what would we include? What's involved? Who do we need? What are the teachers? Is it going to be regulated or unregulated in terms of is the government going to need to approve this, or is this going to be, how do we even get across the regulations or the boards or whatever is required? And saying, hey, we're going to set up a community place for people that want to homeschool, but this is like, you want to homeschool, but you can't homeschool, but this is the next best thing because we do this. Man, I reckon it's going to be as expensive as private school, to be honest, you know, 20, 30 grand. But even that's not expensive. That's actually cheap because it's, what's the cost of your kids of having the right education?
On their future success.
Yeah.
Properly. My brother currently homeschools his kids. He lives on farm and acreage. So
yeah.
So it is interesting though, because
but I think with homeschool, everyone's got a different way to do it, right? Yeah. I think the solution is to present an alternative, because I want to get this ready by the time Ocean's ready to go to school. I go, no, you got to go into this school. this is, I don't know, that would be a solid business idea. I think there'd be a lot of men supportive of that. And it's probably just figuring out how to build it out and taking a look at the curriculum, taking a look at the skills. What are all the skills? Like, it's got to be real practical skills. It's got to be cool. It's got to be fun. And it's got to be worthwhile as an alternative. I think an alternative is needed, but figuring out what that looks like can be our job to lead the next generation.
Mm.
Sound good?
Exciting. Yeah, man. Yeah.
All right. All in. Well, let's wrap this up. Let's wrap this up. That's all we got for you guys today. If you liked this episode, leave a comment down below. Let us know what you think about homeschooling. We obviously touched on nutrition and then we're going back with kids, but you know, is a new homeschool or is an alternative to the schooling system needed? If so, what would you add to your homeschool? What activities would you want your kids to learn? Would you want them to learn self-defense? Would you like them to learn how to make shit and sell shit? Would you like them to learn gymnastics? Would you like them to learn music? All of the different things that they can actually learn as opposed to sitting in the classroom and going through the normal education system, which obviously has its pros and cons. It's produced, you know, adequate people thus far. It's worked thus far. But just seeing where it trends and how dangerous things can shift, such as what was that book, Al? The Shift, that Everything's Normal, that book that went viral on social media last week. Just seeing how certain trends and certain propaganda messages can be infiltrated inside of our schooling system. Is it time that, you know, we create something for the people and for the children by the parents and not by the education system? And so, yeah, I'm interested to hearing your thoughts. Comment down below. Let myself and Al know. And next week, we're going to put together a plan of like, what is the best homeschool that we're going to create? What would be the best system? What would be the best syllabus? What would be cool? What would be fun? How much would it be worth? And obviously, this is a problem that's going to be solved by entrepreneurs. And I think this is where I want to dedicate, you know, my time to figuring out how we can better the life of our kids.
It's a very valuable mission, man, I believe anyway.
Yeah. All right, brother. Well, we'll see you next week. Have a great day and thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye, everybody.
Well, that wraps up another episode. And just as we wind this down, I want you to just reflect and think back through some of the golden nuggets, some of the revelations, some of the sore points, some of the things that might have hit home with you. And then just look at ways that you can apply a different set of actions to change your position, change your circumstances, change your feelings, and change the facts. These episodes are done with your best interest at heart, and there's always something we can get from that. Maybe it's not the first time, maybe it's the second time. We've had members listen to episodes 4 or 5 times, and then it finally clicks. But either way, I hope you got a lot of value out of this. And also, if this is something that you really want to solidify inside of your life, repetition is the key. You've listened to it, write down your revelations, think about them, read them, speak them, believe in the changes that you will carve out in the action plan of those revelations to create change in your life, and then share that. And when you teach, you learn the second time, right? So teaching and showing this to others you love and care about is the greatest way that you can remember and make sure you consistently learn and relearn what is it's true and what is it is important to you in your heart. Take care. Have an amazing day, night, weekday, weekend, and I'll see you for another one soon. Cheers.